Herzlich willkommen zu Verstehe Ayurveda, Verstehe Dich, dem Podcast der Jade Flower Academy mit mir, Ursula Feuerherd. Ich habe heute einen ganz besonderen Gast bei mir, und zwar den indischen Botschafter Kumaran, der seit 2024 in der indischen Botschaft in Österreich ist. Und ich freue mich sehr auf dieses Gespräch und dass er sich die Zeit nimmt. Ich bin gespannt. Er setzt sich nämlich in Österreich sehr dafür ein, dass Ayurveda und Yoga mehr in die Gesellschaft kommt. Er stammt selber aus Kerala, einer Ayurveda-Hochburg in Indien, und ich bin gespannt, wie sehr ihn das auch persönlich geprägt hat. Botschafter Kumaran ist seit 1995 schon im Auswärtigen Amt für Indien tätig und war da schon auf verschiedenen Kontinenten. Er war auf Südafrika, er war in Europa, in Deutschland. Er war ein Kathmandu politischer Berater für die indische Botschaft in Marokko, also eine höchst spannende Vergangenheit, hat viele Kulturen gesehen. Ich freue mich riesig auf das Gespräch. Wir werden auf Deutsch starten und dann mehr in die Tiefe gehen auf Englisch. Also herzlich willkommen, Herr Botschafter Kumaran. Es ist wirklich eine große Ehre, dass Sie heute persönlich auch hier sind und wir sprechen dürfen. Danke, dass Sie sich die Zeit nehmen.
Vielen Dank, Ursula, für die Einladung. Und ich freue mich sehr, mit den Teilnehmern dieser Podcasts durch ihn ein bisschen zu engagieren.
Gerne. Herr Botschafter, Sie sind ja seit 2024 jetzt in der indischen Botschaft in Wien. Wie gefällt Ihnen Österreich?
Österreich ist ein wunderschönes Land. Die Natur ist weltberühmt und sehr beruhigend, würde ich sagen. Die Leute sind sehr freundlich. Und die wollen auch mehr über Indien wissen. Wir machen mehr Geschäfte zusammen. Business wächst. Die politische Dialog zwischen den Ländern auch. Und ich denke, kulturelles Engagement ist auch ein sehr wichtiger Teil der Diplomatie. Und da habe ich bemerkt, dass in Österreich ein wachsendes Interesse an indische Kultur gibt. Und da freue ich mich sehr, also von der Arbeit hier als Botschafter tätig zu sein. Aber auch persönlich ist es ein sehr angenehmes und freundliches Land.
Das ist schön. Ja, wir werden dann auch noch näher darauf eingehen, wie Ihre Arbeit in Österreich aussieht und auch, ja, welches Interesse Sie da bemerken. Das, ja, bin ich gespannt zu hören. Sie stammen ja aus Kerala in Südindien, das ja nicht nur historisch gesehen eine Wiege des Ayurveda ist, sondern wo Ayurveda auch heute im Alltag und selbst im Gesundheitssystem eine große Rolle spielt. Inwiefern hat Sie das beeinflusst in Ihrer Sicht auf Ayurveda, Yoga und den vedischen Wissenschaften?
Es hat einen tiefer Impact in mein Bewusstsein. Dieser Ayurveda und das Denken über Gesundheit ist in Indien, wir auch in andere Länder, aber in Indien eine sehr wichtige Frage. Und in Kerala, wie Sie bemerkt haben, sind wir glücklich, dass wir so eine Tradition seit Jahrhunderten haben. Und der Natur dort hilft, dass wir auch viele Pflanzen haben, die medizinische Werte haben. Und das ist auch, Kerala ist genannt nach dem Kokosnussbaum. Kerala. Das heißt, das Kokosnussöl ist das Medium durch diese medizinische Pflanzen, das wir benutzen können. Und das ist so eine natürliche, eine Kombination, dass es nicht in jedes Land, in jedes Ort gibt. Das heißt, und die Leute dort haben diese Art von Ayurveda sehr stark studiert. Es wird immer noch sehr hoch geschätzt in der Gesellschaft. Das heißt, die ist eine lebendige Tradition.
Ja.
Und die wird auch im Alltag benutzt.
Hm. Ich würde dann auf Englisch
bitte
wechseln. Gehen wir wieder.
Mein Deutsch ist sowieso ein bisschen limitiert. Englisch, ich kann ein bisschen mehr präzise sein.
Ja, es war wunderbar zu verstehen. May I ask also from your personal background, what role did Ayurveda play in your family?
So, Ayurveda is always a part of life in Kerala.
Mm-hmm.
As you grow up, as a child, you get exposed to Ayurvedic concepts. People talk about, you know, how you should eat this and you should not eat that, what time you should eat. Of course, when you fall ill, for example, when I was young, I had a case of jaundice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was asked to eat a certain herb,
yeah,
which was very bitter. So I still remember that, but it helped. And it was said that it was the only herb that could help to get rid of the jaundice.
Wow.
So there is a deep everyday use of Ayurveda in life. And so it became a part, without even knowing, mm-hmm, it becomes like a part of you.
Yeah.
Of course, there were people who you met. Sometimes you met an Ayurveda doctor. Sometimes you consulted. And as you grow older and you don't treat your physique and your health very well,
mm-hmm,
then sometimes you have to go more to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you want to get, you know, some lifestyle issues, if you are, then the Ayurvedic treatments are very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I always had, from time to time, some meetings and consultations with Ayurveda doctors. Thankfully, it did not involve any major health issues.
Yeah.
But I always found it very, very, shall we say, in tune with the natural way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what I also wanted to ask. If this is something, then it becomes like your second nature. You wouldn't even call it, this is an Ayurvedic knowledge I apply in my life. It's just something you grow up with and you apply it automatically.
Absolutely. So mm-hmm, that is what I think, that is how most Indians experience Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we also have a very highly developed schools of Ayurveda. We have Ayurvedic institutions. There are very, very well-recognized doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in Kerala, for example, one would be encouraged every year, for example, to go through a short Ayurvedic course of treatment, mm-hmm, which is more in the nature of what they call Sukha Chikilsa,
mm-hmm,
which in broadly translated is a comfort treatment, which is essentially to ensure that, you know, your body is working properly and that you don't have any issues. So this would involve early morning going in for massage, where two people, mostly in the case of men,
mm-hmm,
it would be men and there would be two men, and you'd be lying on this particularly designated wooden table, and you would have a fairly intense massage, depending, of course, on your condition.
Yeah.
And thereafter, you would have a quick hot water bath.
Mm-hmm.
Use usually the powder of the mung dal, which is used as a soap.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you are then encouraged for the rest of the day to eat very moderate food.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, for many hours, not to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the most difficult thing for me was because most of these massages happen very early in the morning, so you have to wake up. And then after the massage, you feel extremely tired and sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
But you were told that you should not sleep.
Ah, okay.
So these are the little things that one remembers growing up. But I think this is a way to, in a sense, prevent diseases and to keep your physique in good condition.
Mm-hmm. And is the principle of balancing things out, das Prinzip des Ausgleichens auf Deutsch, don't know the exact term in English now, is this also something everyone knows how to apply, like, you know your constitution, you know what your body tells you, the signs, and then you know how to balance it out with the opposite?
The way I see it, and I wrote an article in the Courier newspaper, I called it the triad of wellness, India's triad of wellness, which for me is a civilizational combination of yoga, Ayurveda, and meditation.
Mm.
In itself, each of them helps, but taken together, they represent India's civilizational heritage in thinking about health. And it has, of course, very wider social and other benefits. But by controlling your breath, let's say through meditation and controlling your thoughts, by seeing yourself as being in unity, yoga, with the rest of society, with nature, and with yourself. And by seeing this, of course, whenever you have some imbalances, and seeing your true nature and your composition and your being, and using Ayurvedic systems to try and bring back that balance. Everything in nature craves balance. Everything in nature craves harmony. The thought is that violence, disruption, these are the exceptions. That human beings are innately, like all other beings, essentially peaceful and craving for balance. And that, of course, this is a way of thinking that has been developed in India over many, many hundreds and thousands of years. But I said that this is now, in the modern age, a very useful addition to the way in which we see our health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, for me, it is really a important element, Ayurveda, of the way in which we think about wellness is a better word than health. Because health, in a sense, limits yourself maybe to your physical being or to rectifying some things that you feel are not correct, maybe like a fever, and then you're not healthy. So being free from disease is important. But not being vulnerable to disease and creating a sense that of well-being is even more important. I think that is the deeper effort that we should try
to reach. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, thank you for bringing the more depth into the things, because Ayurveda is so much more than only the physical health, as you said. And may I ask a last personal question? How much do you apply, or do you apply, Ayurveda, yoga, meditation in your own life?
Of course, I do. And I it is also a function of discipline and time. Sometimes you are caught in the rush of the everyday.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not be able to devote enough time. But I do, as often as I can, try and do some of the yoga poses. I try to meditate as often as I can, a little bit. I must say I'm not able to do it for very long. And also, Ayurveda, as I said, is always a part. Like, say you feel that the weather is changing, you're not feeling that comfortable, so maybe you'll take a little bit of, it's a simple thing like taking a bit of milk with turmeric, or having some ginger and honey in the morning, or drinking hot and avoiding cold foods.
Yeah,
you know, small adjustments that you do on your own. And in most Indian homes, you will always find, you know, a little cinnamon or a little clove.
Mm-hmm.
So you use that as, you know, as part of...
As a remedy
and also to sort of try and address some things that, you know, you think might be coming your way, like, or if you have, let's say, some sort of backache, then you try and do some stretches to try and relieve it. Or if you feel you're very stressed, maybe take a few deep breaths and, you know, do some pranayama. So Ayurveda is really a part of life. Mm-hmm. And it's not really always thought of, let me do an Ayurveda solution. It's something that just comes naturally. And I think this is what we would like to offer to our Austrian friends too. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy to see that there is growing interest in it. It is something that we think also unites us as human beings.
Yeah.
Not just as Indians and Austrians. I think everybody is looking to find more peace, more harmony, more wellness. And I think it's a global journey that we're all on together.
Yeah. This is bringing me to my next question, because you've been serving the Indian Foreign Service since 1995, so quite a while. And you've been to countries like Germany, South Africa, the Philippines, Morocco, I believe. You've also been a counselor in Kathmandu, if I'm right. So you've seen many different cultures, and I wanted to ask from your perspective and your experience, which differences did you see in the different places you've been to? And also, where did you maybe experience more openness towards this holistic thinking and also traditional healing methods?
Well, as you would note, my postings have taken me to different parts of the world. Nepal, for example, is very strongly part of the region that India is, and it has very strong similarities, cultural linkages with India. So Ayurveda is definitely very, very strongly present there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things I found, like for example, in South Africa or in Nepal or in the Philippines, is that indigenous communities,
mm-hmm.
some of the tribal communities, for example, they had systems which spoke directly to, you know, Ayurveda in a way in which they used herbs, they used some traditional healing. Some of them not as structured and as detailed and in depth as Ayurveda. But for example, in Philippines, we brought about a tie-up between the Philippines Institute of Traditional and Alternative Healthcare and the Indian Ayurveda system to try and,
mm-hmm.
for example, develop a pharmacopoeia, because Philippines is also very rich in herbs. South Africa similarly. So there's been a new center under WHO on traditional medicine, which has been set up in India.
Mm-hmm.
So diplomatically, I found in all my postings, similarly in Morocco, for example, also a very rich and old culture, where again there are some traditional healing systems.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these systems have become a little weaker in recent years, because they are no longer perhaps as viable economically for people to pursue.
Okay.
But there is a degree of growing interest and state support.
Mm-hmm.
So, and India is also strongly engaged in this area.
Mm-hmm.
We work together with many other countries. So I found great interest. I found interesting similarities and connections, mm-hmm. and we built mm-hmm. on those connections. And let me just say that in Germany and Austria, I sensed a very profound interest in the system. I was in a town recently where they held Mr. Schachinger. He has a resort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he held the German Ayurveda Congress. So
It
brought colleagues from Germany and Austria and Switzerland. And I found that in the German-speaking world, because also of your old interest in Sanskrit and Indology, there was a professor from Frankfurt who spoke at length about the Charaka Samhita.
Mm-hmm.
The level of study that he had done was truly impressive to me, and I learned a lot listening to him.
Okay.
So I find that this very systematic learning of Ayurveda and its teachings in the German-speaking world and the growing public interest
mm-hmm.
is a sign that is very positive for this area, this field, to grow.
Yeah.
And we in the embassy, we have had at least two workshops in the last year focusing on Ayurveda. One was done earlier this October.
Mm-hmm.
And the participation has been not just very positive, but growing. And many, I would say, Ayurvedic centers are growing in Austria. And this is a very positive sign that I see. And I wanted to come to meet you because I also wanted to compliment you on the good work that you are doing to popularize mm-hmm. this. Because this is, I think, good work.
Thank you.
It benefits people.
I hope so. Thank you so much. So you've also attended the seminar days at Dr. Schachinger's place this SOMAMED?
Yes.
Yes.
I went to SOMAMED and I attended the conference and I addressed it. And I found that the interest was not, it was not motivated by anything other than essentially a desire to give back something to society, which I found really uplifting.
Wonderful.
So, you know, people do sometimes things for commercial reasons, etc., which is okay. I mean, I'm not saying that's not good, but I'm saying when you move beyond that and when you want to, just last week, actually earlier this week, a very interesting center was opened. I went to inaugurate a center.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small clinic in Vienna, set up by this second generation Indian doctor who works at the... Dr. Sushil Saini.
Yes.
So I was there at the Jeevan Center,
mm-hmm.
which he has set up in Vienna. And I was very touched about how he was able to combine a very strong and methodical reliance on modern Western medicine with a supportive role that he saw
mm-hmm.
for Ayurveda. And he said that many of his patients wanted more, you know, conversations about Ayurveda, which mm-hmm. I found very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to clarify that we don't see these two medical systems as being in opposition.
Yeah.
I think the objective is the same, a healthy and happy
mm-hmm.
population.
Yeah.
And whatever we can do to make people feel that they are healthier and more well,
mm-hmm.
we should be open to that.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your work also as an ambassador in Austria now and also in the middle of Europe. Where do you see the potentials but also challenges to bring this more to the public awareness and also integrate it maybe more with the health system even?
So the healthcare system, very rightly, is an area that the state is very interested in.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to make sure that the health of the people is not affected adversely in any way. But that also, in a certain way, brings a certain rigidity and a lack of openness. I think that we are talking to the European authorities and many national authorities to find a way to open the regulatory process.
Mm-hmm.
for Ayurvedic treatments and conversations and dialogue and consultations to be enabled.
Yeah.
To get Ayurvedic medicines of good quality available. Ayurvedic treatments more easily and affordably, you know, present in Europe. It's a long, ongoing conversation. I'm not sure that it is moving very fast and definitely not moving fast enough.
Yeah.
We would like it to move faster. While recognizing that health is a very sensitive matter, I think it is time perhaps to open the pathways for a reliable and affordable access to Ayurveda for a larger number of Europeans. And this is what we have been doing. And one of the things is that the availability of medicines now is a big problem because you can't get in medicines of sufficient quantity and good quality.
Yeah.
And some of it is happening through sort of surrogate marketing, I would say, where you market medicines saying these have no therapeutic value. These are, I would say, short-term solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find a long-term process, and I do hope that the health ministry, the other authorities, and the medical fraternity as a whole will open their hearts and minds to Ayurveda more.
Yeah, I support this wish very much. So where do you see the angle to dive in with your work? One thing you mentioned was the herbs and the healing substances one could get and to make this more accessible and in a good quality. And the other maybe angle is to look at the health system itself, maybe to also make Ayurvedic treatment something that social insurances support, or where is the points you want to?
I think all of them, all of what you mentioned, but I think the first thing that we are trying to do is two things. One is increase awareness, talk more about it so that there's a larger community. What I noticed is that we have quite a few people in Austria, for example, who are involved in Ayurveda, but a lot of them don't know about the others.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a small community. We want to try and network this community so that they can reinforce what each person is doing. Because when you know that there are many drops, then that makes an ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to connect all of you and to maybe encourage you, because at the end of the day, I think the Austrian authorities and the insurance companies and others will react to the demands of Austrians.
Yes.
Rather than us from the embassy. Of course, we are happy to support it in any way we want.
Mm.
But we would encourage the community of, let me call them Ayurveda enthusiasts and believers in Austria, and encourage them to talk to others and talk to the rule makers and the lawmakers, the parliamentarians, local officials, to try and see how you could increase these openings for treatments, medicines, and consultation.
Mm-hmm. I see. So I'm happy to continue also our conversation about this, and I'm happy to support in any way this wish.
Which is why I was very keen to come to you and to talk to you and through you to your listeners. Because I want to say that we and the embassy are very supportive of the work that you do, and we would like you to talk to and connect with as many people as possible. It is not, as I said, an effort to try and limit other medical purposes or practices.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is complementary.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are treatments that are available in modern medicine that may not be possible to do in Ayurveda, and we should recognize that openly.
Yeah.
But there are sometimes things that can be done in Ayurveda that may not be able to be done in modern medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's equally important that we recognize that.
Yeah.
So they can work together. For example, there's a cancer treatment, and you have some intrusive treatments, but maybe the recovery or the relief can be done through Ayurvedic treatments.
Mm.
Maybe there's a very strong infection which needs to be treated. But after that, can you prevent the recurrence? Can you maybe shift the lifestyle? Can you look at the nature of the person and prescribe some food items? So this is the way I see it.
Yeah. I also value very much that with Ayurveda, you're much earlier with recognizing any a first inconvenience when something gets out of balance. You are already able to recognize yourself, and you can do steps to correct. Yeah.
For example, when COVID came, we almost instinctively realized that, I should have been a little more conscious about my approach to health.
Yeah.
Because you knew that if you were not in good health, this disease was going to affect you in a more adverse way than if you had taken care of your health. So it was a very, I would say, a big wake-up call for, as you said, to be doing things in advance and not wait for things to become really difficult.
Yeah.
So And this also reduces the burden on the healthcare system. Because at the end of the day, while the healthcare system and society and the state have a responsibility, I think the primary responsibility is also on the individual to make the right choices. And there, I think Ayurveda can be a very big help. And, you know, your podcast and your personal experience, for example, is a powerful story that others can relate to.
Yeah. And as you mentioned before, this connection between the Western medicine and Ayurveda, I think India can be a real good role model how to do that. And I wanted to ask, which role does India, does Ayurveda play also for the Indian government? And how did India or Ayurveda achieve? I mean, for me, the answer is clear because it's just a brilliant system. But how did it achieve that it's still so popular these days and also spread so widely throughout the world, whereas others like the traditional European medicine plays a very little role and only few people know much about it?
In my article, I concluded by saying that perhaps the people in Austria, because you live in the Alps and, you know, the Alps have also, like all mountains, they're rich in treasure of medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think human beings have an innate understanding of that, that nature has some of the answers and that we can do things that can help us. And I think this understanding is very deeply ingrained in India also. It passes through generations to become a sort of social and, you know, deeper human consciousness, which you cannot explain by some books, etc. It's something that your mother said, something that you saw your father doing, something that happened in the family. So this basically, in a sense, reinforces our deep collective awareness that there is something to this. And it is, of course, very scientific, very deeply thought through. And the fact that not all of us are alike in our physical being, in our fires, in our, you know, composition of what we are, is now something that I think modern science recognizes more and more. And that, I think, is something that we knew, so we're rediscovering it. I don't say it's a discovery, but it's a rediscovery of how we can take care of ourselves. And personal choice is a big factor.
Yeah.
We know that wrong choices will lead to wrong outcomes. So certain kinds of food, which we know we are consuming and is leading to a wrong outcome. We know that some people are more badly affected than others in the same family.
Yeah.
Eating the same kind of food. So we know that you need to find. And then, of course, the universal principles about. In India, we say if you have too much, even Amrit, which is the nectar of immortality, is bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
So moderation. Yeah. These are universal principles. Being, you know, limiting your intake, trying to space out the meals, have smaller meals. These are now things that I think modern science is also endorsing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's many details that modern science now bestätigt. Now I don't know the English term, that Ayurveda has been saying like for these thousands of years.
Yeah, that confirmation is, I think, increasingly evident. We need to, in a sense, build on that awareness.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point at which we have these issues around, you know, access and, you know, building a community of awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much deeper. And also what you mentioned, this connecting the dots, what we do in our lives, in our everyday life, not only about nutrition, also, like you said before, the times we eat and how we, what we do with our body and minds, we are able to connect these dots because Ayurveda brings so much awareness into our daily living. thinking, being. Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. You see, Ayurvedic principles you can do even if you don't have to go through an Ayurvedic treatment.
Absolutely.
You can still follow Ayurvedic practices even if you don't have full access to Ayurvedic herbs, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that I think is the real charm of the system, is that, of course, there may be people who need it more and need it in a more effective and organized and, you know, in a, what do we call a medicinal intervention.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many others who don't actually have to go in for that, but can actually integrate Ayurvedic principles very easily in the way in which they live.
Yeah.
So this could be about having more vegetables and plant-based food. This could be about limiting certain kinds of oil-based fried food, all depending on your dosha.
Mm-hmm.
You could, you know, try and improve the kinds of food you eat. You sometimes sense that when you eat, people now talk about, let's say, he's gluten intolerant or he's lactose, you know, resistant and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when you drink something, you eat something, you feel innately that this worked for me. And sometimes you feel this didn't work for me. I still feel a little heavy after some time.
Yeah.
So simple eating practices, combining some things, using some herbs and using some spices, for example, turmeric, super spice,
mm-hmm.
which you can use in many ways, but using things around the house like cloves or cardamom.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that can be easily integrated.
So many things. So, Ambassador, what is your vision for the future of Ayurveda in Austria and Europe?
I would say three things. Number one, greater awareness. Two, I would say greater access, which I would request that everybody works together, the community of Ayurveda and the government authorities. And greater access also includes access to treatment, access to medicines, access to medical facilities. And of course, we welcome all Europeans who wish to travel to India, maybe to Kerala, to, you know, see firsthand.
Mm.
And I know a lot of Austrians, for example, who go to Kerala for treatments for a week or 2 weeks, so on. And many of them come back, you know, recharged. So I would say awareness, access, and self-sustaining, mutually reinforcing community
mm-hmm.
of Ayurveda practitioners and enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see that in Europe
and
in Austria.
Wonderful wish. And what is your personal wish for India?
India is a country that has thousands of years of history. We are a civilizational state. We have been going through, I would say, one of the most fundamental transformations in recent years. It is a unique transformation because we are pulling a very large number of people out of poverty in a democratic framework.
Mm.
And while maintaining our civilizational identity. So this is a historic story of transformation. And I wish to see an India that is growing, more prosperous, that is able to continue to contribute to the health and wellness of its people and for the world. And India has always been open to the world. India has always looked for engagement. So I always see an India as a country that receives and also contributes to global well-being and health.
Mm-hmm. Do you also see this as the heart of India, what you just explained before, this awareness of wholeness, that we are one and connected, and this really true depth and very warm and universally connected mindset? Is this something you would say?
It's strange to talk about power and spirituality in the same breath, but I would say if one were to say India has been always a spiritual superpower.
Hmm.
Our people have had the ability to think deep and to express themselves, and some of those thoughts are you know, available even today. The Indian society and our state relies deeply on these civilizational understandings. And Ayurveda is one of the examples. Yoga, and as I said, wellness is very clearly deeply impacted by our civilizational heritage. So I see this is a very defining element of India, our deep spiritual underpinnings,
mm-hmm.
our great emphasis on non-violence and peace,
mm-hmm.
as a country that seeks harmony both within and without.
Mm-hmm. Thank you also for understanding my question. This was not so clear, but you immediately grasped what I wanted to say. So would you like to also talk about some next steps you want to take with the Indian embassy in Austria? Some projects you're under?
Well, it's the India-Austria relationship is moving ahead very well. We had a very successful visit by Prime Minister Narendra Modi last year.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the first visit by an Indian Prime Minister in over four decades.
Wow.
And we are hoping that we can receive a visit of the Chancellor to India this 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So the political dialogue is moving up. Our economic and business partnership is growing. There are a lot more Austrian companies that are operating in India. There's growing trade. And with the India-EU free trade agreement that is being negotiated, our trade relationship and our investment relationship will be moving to a higher trajectory.
Mm.
There is great interest in Indian culture. But there's also a lot of Indians who travel to Europe to enjoy the beauty of Europe's cities, your culture. There's great admiration for what Europe has achieved in India. So I see that people-to-people, the relationship is very strong. We see more Indian students coming to Europe and to Austria as well. Indian talent is being increasingly in demand to fill some of the gaps that are there in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So we see this as a partnership that has enormous potential. Europe has the technology and capital that can contribute to India's positive economic development. We will be keen to see more Europe in India and more India in Europe.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything else you'd like to address to our listeners that I didn't ask so far?
I would only say that I would only thank everyone who's interested in Ayurveda for their interest. I would encourage them to continue that interest, to sustain it and to promote it and to work together with other enthusiastic proponents of Ayurveda, build a community, increase awareness. Let's work to make access more viable, and together let us build a healthier and happier society and future for ourselves.
Mm. Thank you so much for being here today and for your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Namaste, Gruskart, to all your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you.